2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is my co-host, Matt Pajak of Loden Sports. As always, I'm very excited this week. We have one of my favorite players in the major leagues. I don't think he even realizes that. But Brendan Donovan of the St. Louis Cardinals, an organization that I actually cover as well. So, Brendan, welcome to the show, man. Big fan and excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me. What do you guys want to talk about?
He's got the Eastern Mass. He hits you with the Donovan. Brendan Donovan.
Hey, that's right. My dad's actually from Plaistow, New Hampshire. So we got some family up in the area. He's still got some cat and some habit in him. So it's hard to lose that, the little accent, the slang. He's still got some.
It happens. Irish names. It's going to come out of me, you know.
It has to.
I try so hard not to sound like I'm from Massachusetts, and then it's like Donovan comes on. It's like Donovan.
That's what's endearing about people from the Northeast is that like there's some way they're not mispronouncing your name. They're just pronouncing it with however they talk, and it comes out different. And it's like, oh, he's saying Donovan. But it's coming out with a U.
That's fine. Cool with me. I've heard it my whole life.
Yeah, do they call you Dunny?
I haven't gotten that. That might be a little easier to say for my dad, at least.
Yeah, I think before we get rolling with anything here, I think it's important to note that this is one of the best hitters in baseball. For the people listening that don't know who Brendan Donovan, Donnie Hustle, Donnie Baseball. He's the guy who can't keep his helmet on when he runs the bases with the St. Louis Cardinals. He plays every position on the diamond. He would play catcher if they let him. Currently recovering from an elbow surgery, should be ready to go for opening day. And is everybody's favorite baseball player in St. Louis, kind of. Brendan, before we do anything else, we want to talk about sandwiches. And I want you... Yeah, first off, like Brendan's got a really good track record with me on food. He's one for one. He recommended the Gramophone, which is a sandwich spot in St. Louis. All right. It's got character, it's got charisma. The sandwiches are good. It's the kind of spot where like you want to try every sandwich on the menu. I had the Mississippi Nightclub. And on top of all that, doesn't break the bank. So Brendan, one for one on food recommendations. He knows a sandwich when he sees it. Brendan, I need you to power rank and 2080 grade the following.
Okay.
This is a 90th percentile podcast staple. We bring the guests on and we put them on the hot seat about sandwiches. All right. Subway, Jimmy John's, Jersey Mike's, and Capriati's.
Capriati's?
Yeah.
Jimmy John's, Subway. What about we 2080 in the Gramophone?
Well, you can 2080 the Gramophone all you want. I already got a Capriati's. I think.
So, have I been to Capriati's?
Capriati's is a chain. Have you even heard of it?
I'm sorry. I'm from the South. I know my family's from the Northeast, but I don't think we have that.
Their origin is Delaware, believe it or not.
Oh no, honestly, I've never had a Capriati's, but the name gives it. I mean, that's a substantial name, you know. You can't judge it by its cover, but it sounds like they got good bread.
They do have good bread. They do a sandwich called the Hot Bobby, which is like Thanksgiving on a sandwich.
Okay. So
it's America's favorite sandwich.
20 to 80 scale, right? Obviously, these sandwich chains have had a lot of success. So day in and day out, they show that they're sustainable and can compete at a high level. Are they your one percenters or your superstars? Probably not, but they've shown that they can get the job done day in and day out. So Subway, I'm going to go 40. Subway's a 40 on my scale. You know, they fill a hole, right? They,
a hole in your stomach.
They fill a hole in your stomach. You're never disappointed, right? They're your slightly above the average sandwich. I consider like 35 to be kind of my average sandwich, slightly above average sandwich. No, it's just a good solid sandwich. And the next one was Jersey Mike's.
Yep.
Jersey Mike's is a 45 for me. You know, I like it. I think.
Do you like it Mike's way?
Well, so when you say Jersey Mike's, I know there's like actually a Jimmy John. Who is Jersey Mike? Is his name Jersey Mike?
No, it's Jersey Michael.
Is it Jersey Michael? Michael, is he from Jersey, and his name's Michael?
I don't know. I'm gonna look this up right now.
I don't know because I know Jimmy.
It was founded on the Jersey Shore. It's a shore sandwich shop.
Okay,
know so that
name's got to be Michael.
Point Pleasant.
No, the founder's name's Peter Cancro.
Oh.
So we're going to start calling it Jersey Peters.
Yeah. So I got Subway being a 40. I got Jimmy John's being a 45. And then, I mean, I got to do Gramophone. I mean, that's a 70, 75. Like that is one of the best sandwiches I've had, but you can't max the scale out because there's so many unknowns out there. You got to stick reliable to your scale. It's like Portnoy's pizza scale, you can't give a 10. You have to stay within a good range because you never know what else is out there. So 40, 45, and 70, 275, up to 75. But I want to hear what you guys think.
No, that's a solid philosophy. But one thing that I'll counter with is that when it comes to the 20-80 scale, Sean Campbell always told me use the whole scale. That's why it's there.
But, I mean, each year players do something a little different, right? You think of like if someone's an 80 grade runner, someone seems to get a little faster each year, right? So
hey, I'm not going to get into a statistics discussion with you here, but when it comes to a distribution, you can have more than one guy with an 80.
Listen, I've been hammered by the scale my whole career, so I'm with you.
If Jeff had you as a 30 runner.
That's okay.
No, I'm like, there's no way I had him under 50.
That's why I was almost late to this podcast. We were running a little bit, trying to see if we can find an extra step. Turns out when you're 26 years old, it's hard to find extra steps out there, but we're still searching.
Always searching. And that leads into this next question.
Oh, I wanted to bring up one little tidbit about Capriotti's, Matt.
All right, let's hear it.
We're going to go back to Capriotti's and then we didn't even.
And then we'll jump in.
No, we also didn't give Brendan our ranking, to be fair.
That's true. We didn't.
Yeah, and he also didn't rank Jimmy John. So let's run it back to
the. Yeah, no, he put a 45 on Jimmy John's.
Did you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jeff. Capriotti's, and then do your ranking. I'll do my ranking.
Sure.
And
we'll ask the very interesting question. I was at Foxborough this week, as you know, for a Patriots game with my son. I walked into the stadium. My goal was to walk over to Capriotti's and get a hot Bobby with the boy. And Capriotti's is closed in Foxborough, Matt. There was no more Capriotti's in Massachusetts. My closest Capriotti's is now in Long Island.
Dude, that's just another L for the Patriots. Chalk it up.
Yeah. Yep. I blame Bill, frankly.
Hey, Brendan Donovan is a Patriots fan. Just so you
know.
Are you really?
I am. Yeah. It's passed down from my dad. Everything growing up, we were at New England, everything.
I like you more.
Three peas in a pod.
We were actually, Albert Pujols hooked us up 2022. We were at game 6. Up in a box in Boston when the Warriors clinched. So it was pretty devastating, but one of the coolest sports events I've been to.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I didn't realize that. As for my scale, I am 20 on Subway. Mm. I'm 30 on Jimmy John's. I am probably a 50 on Jersey Mike's. And then Capriotti's no longer is on the scale for me. I'm removing Capriotti's from the discussion. Now that they've moved out of Massachusetts.
There's not enough data. Not enough data to support it.
Yeah.
Not enough data to support it. Jeff has removed Capriotti's. Brendan doesn't know what Capriotti's is, and Capriotti's remains number one in my heart. For sandwich chains, Capriotti's is like a, what do I give it, like a 60? It's like a 55 or a 60. It's somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you can't give these sandwich chains too much love. I used to eat a lot of Subway. That's like a 25 or a 30 for me now. Their cookies are good. Jersey Mike's I think is like right around a 40. Jimmy John's is like a 35 for me. But yeah, Capriati's is safely well above all of those. And Gramophone is a hard 60 for me. Like, it is a plus sandwich. And that's, you know, that's on the scale of all foods, right? On the scale of all foods. So that's why, like, when you look at Subway, you know, Brennan's like, all right, I'm going to put Subway at 40. That's fine. If you're just looking at sandwiches, I put it on a scale of all foods. Subway for me is very low on the scale of all foods.
But we said sandwiches. Hey. When you're talking about a 20 to 80 scale, a lot of the scale is dependent on, can this guy be a major league average player? Subway, day in, day out, year in, year out, gets the job done. Jersey Mike, same thing. But when it comes to the Gramophone, they just go above and beyond. They knock your socks off. It's just a different level. So that's kind
of... Gramophone is like 10-year big leaguer, pension, all-star, gold gloves, silver slugger.
Yeah, it's Paul Goldschmidt.
Wow. I love the player comp.
Yeah. does everything right.
Shout out to my buddy Eric Peterson, who when he grades sandwiches, he pulls out a pack of baseball cards and he goes through the cards and then he assigns a player to whatever he's eating.
That's cool.
Does he just walk around with unopened cards?
Nah, he doesn't do it all the time, but him and his brother do it. I remember, okay, so he was the one who put me on a Capriati's.
I know.
And so I get this video of him eating the sandwich. It might have actually been his twin brother. They're identical, so I can't remember which one it was. He's eating the hot Bobby, and I'm like, I don't really know about Capriati's like that. And he graded it he pulled out a pack of cards, he ripped them open, he gave it Javi Baez. He's like, this is a really flashy sandwich. And I'm like, I can get down with a flashy sandwich. Give me a Javi Baez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want him to opt in for 4 years. I'm a fan of the Detroit Tigers, but that's besides the point. Brendan, do me a favor, and I'm on this. I've been on this for the past couple of days. Everyone's been hearing this question. What can you tell me about your kindergarten teacher?
So I'm sorry if you're listening to this. But I don't remember. I'm sure you're amazing. I stayed in the school, so I guess my parents were very proud of the way that I was developing and napping and never good at coloring. So my family was stationed in Fort Campbell at the time. We're living in Clarksville, Tennessee. I think why I don't really remember is because some of my earliest memories of school were when I moved to Alabama. So that Tennessee area kind of blurred out for me. I don't even remember the name of the school. Glen Ellen Elementary. I'm sorry, I do remember in Clarksville, Tennessee. But I'm sorry, I don't remember. But
do you remember like approximate age, maybe?
I should probably know that. When do you start school? When you're five?
Yeah, you're five.
I should five. So you're five or six in kindergarten, right? Or is there like a pre-K? It just seems to change every year. And I gotta figure these things out. So if anyone wanna give me some wisdom, I'm all ears.
Hey, no, I read about this study in an Adam Grant book this week, and this is what I'm on. And it was over 11,000 kids. And it was in the state of Tennessee. And basically what they showed was that the more experienced your kindergarten teacher was, the higher likelihood of success in your adult life as measured by income. And basically for like that, if you replaced like a below average experienced kindergarten teacher with an average experienced kindergarten teacher, it like moved the needle like a ridiculous amount towards future earnings for these kids. So it was like a large study. If your kindergarten teacher was experienced, you were going to go on to, you were much more likely to go on and have success. So what I hypothesized was that Brendan Donovan had a very experienced kindergarten teacher, because the reason why is that the kindergarten teacher instills certain character traits like discipline, determination, pro-social, which is, basically, how well you get along with your peers. And I think there was one other one, I can't remember off the top of my head, but The point being is that an experienced kindergarten teacher instills those character traits, and those character traits stick with you much longer than early success on standardized tests. So all of that to say, I
read the study after you had asked the question, and I thought what was really interesting about it too, is they saw this sort of runway of success up until like the seventh, eighth grade. And then like the general population sort of caught up. But the interesting part, and as you mentioned, it all of a sudden shows back up once they're in adulthood and have jobs. Then all of a sudden, like that's where the success sort of pops up again. But there was like this low period.
There was another one that was like, it was within that it showed that if you had an average experienced kindergarten teacher as opposed to a not experienced kindergarten teacher in the lower income areas, like there was a much reduced rate of teenage pregnancy as well. So like it had all of these different impacts on these kids later on in life. But all that to say, I don't know if there's a way for you to look up who your kindergarten teacher was. That'd be really interesting.
Sounds like she was amazing. No, I think it's extremely important from a young age, teachers, coaches, mentors, parents, friends, family members, they all play a very important role. And your brain is just a sponge, you know. They can feed you with positivity and teach you good, strong life lessons, then probably got a chance for success.
Yeah, that's you.
Well said.
Brendan is success. Tell us about your off season. Living in Florida and saving the turtles.
Yeah. So Florida is amazing. South Florida is amazing. The area that we're in, Palm Beach Gardens and Jupiter, are actually in the process of closing on a house and moving into Jupiter. We're in Palm Beach Gardens now. It is beautiful. I mean, I don't know if you can see behind me, but you got palm trees.
It's a poster.
I was going to do it on the back patio, but it was too loud. It's hard not to be passionate about this area. You know, when we got down here, it was kind of Jupiter itself and Juneau Beach is a hidden gem for a location. Matt, you've been. Jeff, have you been?
Yeah, I'm down there for spring training every year. It's one of my favorite cities in the United States. And I've often described it as if you built a city out of Legos, it would kind of look like that. Like it's like it's perfectly put together. And from when you're from the Northeast and the roads don't make sense, it's very nice that the roads make sense there as well.
Right.
Yeah, I'm usually down there for 2 weeks every spring training. So I was there all throughout minor league camp the last 2 years.
Awesome. We'll have to get up, go get some food or something.
Yeah, Copacabana.
Yeah, bring me a sandwich. So we decided we want to get involved in the community. I think it's important, no matter where you're at, to just be involved in the community. And one thing that this area is very passionate about is the beaches and the marine life. So we got involved with the Loggerhead Marine Life Center. We donated to them, and we're part of this group called the Gordon Gray Group of 100. We're looking for volunteering opportunities. We're going to volunteer with Conservation Florida as well. I think it's important, no matter where you're at, just to give something, whether it's time, whether it's money or support, whatever you can do. And so I'm passionate about this area, and it's an area that I want to stay in for a long time, raise some kids here. And I want my kids to see like it's should take pride in things. There's no difference between your work ethic and how you are at home. I think who you are is who you are. And so I think that's important to kind of instill in kids one day.
Yeah, in a world where you weren't imprinting laces on baseball bat barrels, you were probably a marine biologist.
Maybe. I want to get dive certified. I think that's a post-baseball career. Hopefully that's not for a long time. But you know, we paddleboard every Friday morning. You paddleboard. There's a group down here, awesome surf shop called Blue Line. We go out with them every Friday morning. I do some PT, and then we play catch, and then that's the workout for the day. And man, it is a brutal workout. Just trying to stay on that board. The big boats are starting to come down, so the waves are. I took two tumbles last Friday. I was the only one that took a tumble. My wife is actually very elite. I won't tell her this, but she's very elite. At paddleboarding college cheerleader. So the balance aspect and the ability to just adapt and is pretty impressive. And we'll do some snorkeling, but I want to get dive certified. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah. She's also an elite jumper on the Luden Sports app.
Yeah. So.
Is she really?
Yeah. He uses the app too. She records, she jumps, she's one of the dummies too. So we're a loading household.
Awesome. I'll have to get my former cheerleader wife on that and see if she's more athletic than I am.
Get out on the paddle. We'll go when you're down here.
I used to surf, and actually it's funny, but we went on our honeymoon to Hawaii and we went surfing, and she was much better, like, initially than I anticipated she would be, you know, which obviously, you know, big
when ways. When Brendan's future kid is a double plus runner, it was all Allie.
Well, maybe yeah, they gotta have
no, some. All Allie. It was Brendan's work. Allie's genetics.
she can have my savviness, and then the kid can have her athleticism. I think we'll be all right there. I don't know. That's Jeff said I was a 30 grade runner, so hopefully he gets.
I'm about to pull out the book. I'm like, I don't even think I ranked you as a prospect with BA, but
well, Brendan was never a prospect, so
no, it's good. I wear that on my. Actually, I lied. I was a prospect in 21, 21 going into 22. I think I cracked it in 21, and then going into 22. So I can't deny that at all. But it initially wasn't. But I mean, do what you can.
Yeah, we're going to get into that here in a minute. But before we do anything else, I do want you to tell us about the turtle that you adopted. I think that's a very important part of this discussion. Yeah.
So when we've been a couple times to the Marine Life Center. If you're down here, if you go to the Loggerhead Marine Life Center, it's really, really cool. So what they do is they have a bunch of tanks, and they nurse these turtles that they find floating or washed up on shore, or even hatchlings that couldn't get out to the ocean. And they essentially nurse them back to life. So we went through, we talked to someone, got a behind the scenes tour. We watched one turtle actually go through its like doctor's appointment. They cleaning the shell, and they just got a transfusion and everything. So when we left, they gave us a certificate of adoption for a loggerhead sea turtle named Sandy. We didn't actually keep it. It's just like a way to track the progress. And then when they're released, just kind of track them. They put I don't know about all of them. I actually haven't looked, but she actually just got released. But I think some of them, they put GPS trackers on, just kind of track their progress and where they're going. So it was really cool. You know, you don't actually get to keep it, but you're technically the proud parents of a sea turtle.
It's not like a Mike Tyson tiger roaming around the living room situation.
No. No, that'd be terrifying.
All right. Well, mackerel
around the house to feed the turtle.
Yeah.
Exposure funnel is why we're here. Brendan, you've read the project. We've done a couple of podcasts at this point, a couple of different stakeholders from the funnel involved in that. And, you know, you had some thoughts after I sent it to you. I think your exact words were something along the line of like every person, parent, coach, whatever, that has any say in a kid's future needs to read this. I kind of want to just, you know, going off of what you read, your general thoughts on the current state of amateur baseball. Let's start there.
Yeah. I mean, first off, it needs help. But it's good that you can raise awareness. I mean, you don't really know things until there's awareness around it. So, I mean, the part that sticks out is like kind of the 12U age. That age is extremely important just for like the development of, you know, kids' brains and athleticism and sports specific things. So that's the area that I think is one that can be tapped into. And two, it's like you can teach kids how to be a winning person, how to be a winning player, how to be a great teammate, how to be selfless, how to have a good work ethic. Like you can do these things, but I think if it was up to me, man, as like a 12U coach, I wouldn't turn any kid away. You know, I know there's certain things like certain teams, like I would find a way for every kid to play the game naturally, whether you're in life or in sports, it naturally weeds people out. Like it's just what happens. So if I was a 12U coach, it's not my job to weed a kid. I can't push anybody away. Everyone deserves an equal opportunity to play. And then over the course of a couple of years, I mean, you can see the writing on the wall. You know, some kids are meant to continue to play and some kids are meant to be neurosurgeons. It's just part of it. But I think in sports, you gain certain character traits and the ability to work with a team and work ethic and time management and accountability that I think every kid needs. So that when I read it, it was pretty eye-opening just how many people are turned away from sports and it's amateur baseball. And I think it's important for you to continue to raise awareness, for me to continue to raise awareness, then we can make a difference in it.
Yeah. Premature weeding.
Yeah.
If you're going to tag exposure funnel to us, we're going to tag the phrase premature weeding to Brendan. He brings up a really good point. Like it really isn't until, you know, later on you get to high school, college, professional baseball, you know, for some guys who have that opportunity that like you really should, you know, be under the magnifying glass and being evaluated to either get cut. But like to your point, like, you know, they're taking the biggest kids at 12U, 11U, whatever, and it's not indicative of future success. And I think it's really interesting. And I think it's a model that you explained in how you'd go about a 12U coaching a 12U team. You wouldn't cut anybody. You wouldn't turn anybody away. I think that's a model that exists in a lot of other countries mm-hmm. where, you know, all these kids are going to grow at different rates. And when they all grow up, like the kid that you might have cut, like he might end up being 6'3 or 6'4 and, you know, late bloomer and really have a knack for the barrel, something to that effect. But you cut him at 11 or 12 years old, he stops playing baseball and you never know, you know?
Yeah. Kids develop at so many, like, just different rates. You know, you never know. Like you said, you never know. This kid could be a smaller, shorter, weaker kid, and then 2 years later, he's 6'3". Like, you never know.
Yeah. So I do want to talk a little bit about, like, paralleling, you know, obviously you came through it. Your experience in amateur baseball from when you were younger, you know, start, you know, T-ball, little league, whatever it might be, travel baseball, ultimately getting recruited. Just kind of talk about like what your path was. And I would bet that it's probably a little bit different than what kids are currently trying to navigate.
Yeah. So I started playing T-ball because one of my friends, my dad was, we were in Tennessee. My dad was stationed overseas. He was in Iraq. And my mom was like, hey, your friend Blake is playing T-ball. Do you want to play? And I only played because I wanted to hang out with him more. But my first love was hockey. That's why I hit left-handed. The right hand controls the stick and then on a slap shot. And then it just translates to just hands coming down on the bat. So it's why a lot of, I think I read something somewhere. It says why a lot of Northeastern and Canadian born players throw right-handed and hit left-handed is because of hockey. So that's initially why I hit left-handed and threw right-handed, because my right hand was my dominant hand. So started playing. I joke with my parents. I said my mom taught me how to hit because dad was overseas. So then we moved to Enterprise, Alabama. My dad was stationed Fort Rucker. I believe some of the bases are changing names, but we've been out of the kind of the circle for a while. So I'm not really sure what the names are anymore. But and you know, it was hard to get into sports. Was my way in, right? It was my ability to make friends and to interact with people. You know, school is great, but I think sports is where you really make true friendships and bonds with people, and also great for parents too. That's where my parents too make friendships with my teammates' parents. But it was hard to kind of get settled in. But luckily, unlike in today's game, is like I was welcomed in. You know, I was welcome. Hey, come play, come play. We had rec ball. Everyone played rec ball. I think it was great. I mean, your team may stink, but you're learning a lot of things. You're learning kind of accountability. Like you have to go to practice, you have to do all these things, and then they have all-stars. I'm not against that at all. I think it's important for teaching winning mentalities. And then as you start to get older, I started to find this group of people that I was getting close with, and we started to do like kind of the youth travel ball. We started to have kind of the same group. But one thing I loved about the coaches is they were welcoming of all kids. If somebody wanted to come play with us, they were allowed to come play with us. You know, if you could make us better, then let's do it. And then I started to get into middle school. You trust, that's when kind of the weeding process starts happening. you start to transition into middle school baseball, and then you start transitioning into high school baseball. So I made my junior varsity team when I was in ninth grade, played with them for about 2 weeks, and then I got called up to varsity to play shortstop. And that's when I realized, like, I think I have a chance to play in college. Obviously if I continue to do the right things, but I had a knack for, just finding a way to get hits. I hit the ball the other way. If I couldn't pull the ball at all, every time I tried to pull the ball, I hit a ground ball to the second baseman. So I was like, at a young age, I was like, I want to get hits. So the only way to get a hit was to back it up and shoot it over the shortstop's head, which is actually turns out to be one of the best things that could have happened in my baseball career.
Yeah, but you still do that really well.
Still, I mean, you have to have that. There's a lot of hits over there. I know, but then guys start throwing the cutters and everything in, but we'll get into that later. We had Legion ball. That was kind of my next transition into going off and playing. Was we had a team out of Troy, Alabama. I'd go play Legion ball. And then that was when I was like, all right, you know, let's see how I do here. And I, you know, every different level had an adjustment period. It's like, all right, how can I adjust to the league? How can I make those adjustments on the fly? How can I see the whole field and find a way to continue to produce? And I love Legion ball. It was great. The travel wasn't crazy. I mean, you go all over Alabama, and I think they had like the big Legion ball World Series. We never made it. We always lost in the finals. But and then after my junior year summer, that was when Lake Point was starting to become popular. I played at Lake Point when there's four fields. So I was like kind of like the first wave of people starting to play there. And we would play at East Cobb. We play at like local high schools. I think it was like Stone Mountain High School. And you go all over. I mean, if you had an 8 a.m. game, you could be driving an hour and a half to a local Georgia field to play your game. And that's when travel ball like exploded. I remember rolling up. You're promised one game at Lake Point. And they're like, yeah, they're going to turn this into perfect game's going to blow this thing up. And I remember I came back the next year and there's like 16 fields. And then I can't imagine how many there are now. I know, I don't think perfect game's using Lake Point anymore, but I know there's got to be a ton of fields. So it was like a natural progression. And when I wasn't playing baseball, I played football. And when I was up until like middle school, I played soccer and basketball. Like I played everything. Now I didn't play fall baseball. I played football. So I think I learned a lot of things, a little bit of toughness in football. I learned a little bit of ability to use my feet in soccer. And then I wasn't very good at basketball, but it taught me kind of how to see the floor and things like that. So, I mean, if any kids listening, I'd be like, play all the sports. You gain something unique from each and every one of them. So that's kind of my process. Committed to South Alabama after my I think it was in my senior year after my junior summer, which is kind of like right on pace for how it was in 2014. But I think it's a little different now.
Yeah. We talked about this offline the other day, and I think it's a great story if you're willing to share it, but I want you to share how you caught the attention. And you talked about football and how you learned some toughness there. Obviously you're from a military background. I want you to talk about how you caught the attention of the coaches at South Alabama.
Oh yeah. I didn't know this at the time. My head coach at South Alabama's name's Mark Calvi, and he is awesome. My time there, I learned so much about me, how to be a grown up, how to play baseball. So I wouldn't change that for the world. So I'm in high school. I'm going down to Gulf Coast State College. I believe that's what it's still called, in Panama City, Florida. They have this thing called the Florida Top 100. They take kids from like all over the panhandle. I think some kids from South Florida may come up too. And you do, it's like a showcase, and then you play some games. And then, so I'm like, I have to do everything I can to get notice. I didn't catch much, but I remember I threw from behind the plate and I was just like, it was not good. But I'm like, hey, if you need me to do it, I'll do it. And then I threw from the outfield. And then I was taking ground balls at third base. I was like, well, there's not a lot of kids at third base. I'll go to third base. And the throw that hardly ever happens in baseball is when the first baseman gets a ground ball and throws it to the third baseman. It just like hardly ever happens. But for some reason, we do it in a showcase because we want to see the arm strength of the first baseman. And so I'm over there at third base. They hit a ground ball to the first baseman. All the scouts and coaches are in the third base dugout, and these kids are just like trying to show it off. I get it. I'll probably spike some to first base too. So this kid lets it fly. And the natural instinct is to kind of like drop and block it, and it skips off the lip and it hits me in the neck and it rolls over like towards the dugout, and I'm hurting. Like I'm holding back tears. I can't breathe. And I just like naturally, like, I'm like, don't show anyone, don't show anyone. I hear my dad in my back of head, don't you show anyone. So I walk over, I grab the ball and I toss it in, and someone's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I'm all right. I can't speak. I can't breathe. And I'm just like, don't show anyone. And I go back over to my position. And that's what caught the attention. I mean, obviously they saw me. He's like, this kid, like, you know, he's kind of all over the place. Like, he's a little bit of a spaz, but he's throwing from different positions. Like, he's hustling. And he sees me. I do okay. I make the plays. I hit a couple balls on the barrel. But he tells our recruiting coordinator at the time, his name's Jerry Zuli. He was like, I need to know if this kid can play. He's like, this kid, like, there's something about this kid. And I didn't know this until like my sophomore year at South is when he told the story. He's like, I need to know if this kid can hit. And so they followed me. They followed me for weeks. And I'm like, when are they going to offer? When are they going to offer? And eventually they offered. And then it was kind of a no-brainer. Whenever I got down there, I saw the campus and I met the coaches. And but I was like, that's like three different positions, running well, a good BP. Like, that's the thing that drew their attention. So I guess the upbringing helps.
Sometimes you got to wear one in the throat to get someone's attention.
Yeah, I guess so. So cool. That's my cool story. That's my recruiting story. I didn't go out and hit 500 in a perfect game tournament. I took a ball off the jugular.
Oh, that's beautiful. I do want to talk a little bit about something that we haven't discussed, Jeff. We haven't talked about the pro side of the exposure funnel. You know, everyone likes to say like, oh, just give me a chance, get me in a pro ball and I'll show them what I can do. But there are so many, I mean, in some cases, horror stories, in some cases, you know, whatever it is, of guys who get into pro ball. And even though they're there, they don't really get a chance. I think we all know, you know, a guy or two, or in Brendan's case, you probably know many because you played with a lot of them. But there is a hierarchy for playing time. There's only 9 innings in a game, and there's only, you know, one guy at each position. So something I want to talk about are, you know, some of the elements in the exposure funnel in that project that we've discussed. You know, bias being, you know, that primary element that I kind of want to discuss. How does that come into play in professional baseball? And you don't have to speak specifically for your story. But, you know, Jeff's a prospect writer. He writes about professional baseball players and affiliated baseball. And you recently navigated your way all the way to the big leagues, to being a big league regular without, I mean, for a very brief moment, you were named to a prospect list. So, yeah, talk about that.
I mean, I think it's like this anywhere. Sports and life. I mean, especially when you start to talk about professional baseball, you're talking about a business, right? You're talking about investments. And when you look at it from a business perspective, like money, when money's involved, like that's an investment. So, I mean, obviously there's going to be bias and, you know, some more hype and things like that. Like these highly touted kids that get a lot of money. Obviously, there's going to be like this kid needs his at-bats, this kid needs his innings, this kid needs to play this position. But I've always believed that if you go about your business the right way and you're a good teammate and you just put up your numbers, you see the order I put that in. It's not about putting up your numbers and then being a good teammate. It's being a good teammate and then putting up your numbers, because I think it's important. And at the end of the day, production always wins. Whether you're the kid the free agent signed out of a small school or you're the first rounder out of a big school or a high school, it's production. Production matters, and who you are as a person matters. So that's, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, I can give examples. I actually told this story in a hitters meeting. I was a seventh rounder out of South Alabama as a junior, so I had some financial flexibility because they bought out my senior year of college. I come in immediately and I get hurt. I tear my TFCC in my right wrist. So now you're talking about playing four games and going straight into rehab, coming down actually here, rehabbing at our spring training complex. So I'm like, wow, I need to find a way not to go to extended. I do not want to go to extended. I need to get out. I need to play. And so, hey, we're going to move you. I was drafted as third base, and we're going to move you to second base. Nolan Gorman, one of my great friends, came in first rounder and absolutely just scorched minor league baseball. Still scorches even the big leagues. Like, he's just an elite talent. And I was like, I need to find a way to get on the field. They're like, hey, we want to move you to second base. I'm like, fine, whatever. I need to play. I need to get innings. If I go to extended, I'm kind of just pushed to the side. I was like, I'll play whatever. So I play second base, and I'm learning how to play a position. And I was like, I struggled, you know. And it's like I talked about with each level, there's an adjustment period. So continue to struggle. All right, what works for me? How can I see the whole field? How can I make adjustments? And then, all right, you know, I ended up having a decent year. I played that year in low A and got the nod to go as like a backup to one game in triple A that year, and got like one at bat in triple A because they just needed guys with September call-ups. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. Come in to, end of 2019, we have a hitting camp. We're bringing in Jeff Albert. We're bringing in Russ Steinhorn. We're bringing in these guys, and they're going to revamp the hitting. First off, amazing guys. Still believe in those philosophies, still do what they teach. Made a complete swing haul just in time, show up for spring training, end up going to the World Baseball Classic in 2020 qualifier with Team Germany. Everything gets shut down, COVID. So I go home and I'm sitting at home and I'm like, what do I do? Like, I kind of had an idea. I was like, we're not going to have a season. Like, we don't even have a big league season. And then I find out it's 60 games. I was like, there's no way there's going to be a minor league season. It's honestly the best thing that happened for me, because I was like, I need to get better at second base. I need to make these swing haul adjustment hauls, and I need to find a way to just continue to adjust and grow. And then that was about the time that we acquired another guy named Nolan. So now I got two Nolans. One is one of the best third basemen this game has ever seen. And then the other, Nolan, moved from third to second. So I'm like, where do I go? You know, like this is like that hierarchy, right? Or that bias, like it's the business side of things, right? Nolan Gorman just absolutely scorched baseball, and he's a first rounder. Nolan Arenado is one of the best third basemen this game has ever seen. I was like, where do I fit? I was like, well, so I went everywhere. I was like, hey, I'll play in the outfield. I'll play first base. I'll play third base. And at one point in double A, they're like, hey, we need you to play shortstop. I was like, all right, this is terrifying, but I'll do it. So that's why I say production matters. I could have been bitter. And there's times that I was a little bitter, and I was like, what about me? It's not about me. It's about the organization. If I really want to play in the big leagues, I need to find a way. So that's kind of my story. There's always a silver lining in it. Well, production wins.
Yeah, I just remember the production was ridiculous coming out of that 2020 COVID situation, right? Like, didn't you went high A, double A, triple A, and then you were on the taxi squad for the playoff game in LA, and then they sent you to the fall league. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you went, you hit a lot. Yeah. Right. It's not like, oh, you hit 2.6. No, you hit a lot at every level. Fall league that year, you hit 308 with an OPS over 900. And you were like the last vote into the Fall Stars game.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's funny you say that. We didn't. It was, I think it was Jackson Clough, Corey Lee, who was my roommate at the time, and me. And I was like, I didn't think I was going to get voted in. So I was like, hey, Corey, what do you want to do tomorrow? I was like, I don't think we're going to get voted in. He's like, what do you say we just sleep in and hang out? I was like, that's fine with me. And then we found out we'd both been voted in. So we're like, all right, well, we got to lock it in for one more game. But that was a cool experience. But at each level, there's that adjustment period, right? When I got to AAA, I was like, wow, and I struggled. And then when I got to the Fall League, I kind of like got off to a little bit of a slower start. And then, but it's supposed to be like that. Like each level gets sharper. And that's why in the big leagues, it's like, how fast can you make the adjustments? Because it's a gauntlet. And then from year to year, it's adjustments, right? I mean, they look at what I did last year. This guy likes to see pitches. Let's attack it. Now I got to learn how to go after first pitches, get my best swing off early in counts. And it's if you can make those adjustments, the best players make adjustments the quickest.
Yeah, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, you played all four infield positions in your first week in the big leagues.
Correct? Yeah, what a terrifying week. talk about, you're already like nervous. So first start was first base. My second start was third base. My third start was second base. And my fourth start was shortstop. Four starts, four different positions. And I was like, this is either going to go really well or this is going to go really bad. But like, I can't control that. I'm already not sleeping. I'm terrified. I'm extremely nervous. But I mean, I think nerves come with things that matter. So I gave my confidence through preparation. So I was like, I'm just going to be the most prepared guy out there. Even though I'm Stubby, our infield coach, Stubby Clapp, he was like, hey, we got to learn how to play shortstop today. I was like, all right, that's fine with me. So we did early work. Then we did our defensive routine. And then we did a couple more ground balls during BP. He was like, dude, you're either going to be way too exhausted to play tonight or you're going to be the most prepared guy on the field. And I was like, I think it's a little bit of both, but let's see what we got.
Yeah, Jeff is a big hip hop head, and you definitely just dropped the bar. I don't know if it's a Brendan Donovan original. If it is, then you know, two claps and a Ric Flair, whatever they say these days. Nerves come with things that matter.
Is that a rap verse?
No, is that a new original?
Oh,
that was fire. Shooting
from the hip over here.
Yeah,
I'll have to go back and listen to the podcast. It could. To people listening, it may sound like just complete gibberish, but in my head right now, it makes sense.
No, I mean, that's not gibberish at all. I don't know if that was unconscious or what it was, but damn, that might be the hardest bar in the history of the 90th percentile podcast. Jeff, he really just said nerves come with things that matter. I mean, you could insert that into a... I'm blown away.
That could be the opening line to an article, frankly. It's a good one.
Well, I'm on it.
Brendan,
it's only downhill from here.
Yeah, you played six positions that year. I think you played six positions again this past year. In that first full year in the big leagues when you were a rookie, you were also the first ever recipient of the NL Gold Glove Award for utility player, which is special in its own right and a testament to, it sounds like, I mean, you just told us where you started, right? Like, hey, Nolan Gorman's playing third base, so I got to go learn second base. And it didn't go particularly well. And that was all in professional baseball.
Yeah.
And then you rose all the way up and got yourself some hardware. So kudos to you on that and always finding a way. I want to go a little bit more into the exposure funnel and talk a little bit about a solution. Okay. An objective solution that could potentially cut through some of the subjective rankings that are out there for amateur players. The slammer score is specifically what I'm going to call out, which factors in athleticism, game performance, and then, you know, batted ball and pitching ball data. So I just kind of want to get your thoughts a little bit, what you think of an objective system as opposed to almost a strictly subjective system for rating talent and what that would accomplish.
Yeah, I think it takes all the, it takes hype, it takes bias, it takes all of that, and it kind of gives you like a level playing field. Let's completely judge these kids based off of these three things, and then I think that's the best way. I mean, you need all those things, right? You need athleticism. We're talking about like the development of kids too. Like they develop at all different rates, right? If you can have two out of three of those things to start, I think you're in a good spot. I mean, this kid, right, he's athletic and he makes good swing decisions, but he doesn't have good stats, right? Well, let's look a little deeper into that. Maybe he's just hit the ball on the ground, or maybe he's just like late, but he's going on the right pitches. Or let's say this kid has really good game stats and he's athletic, but, you know, the swing decisions say that over a course of time, like he's not going to be able to, you know, control the zone at a higher level. I mean, all these things go into it. And I'm a firm believer in stats don't tell the whole story. There's so many things that go into it. But I think that athleticism piece is so important, especially you want to talk about like weeding kids out. Like there's some kids out there, like these hidden gems, they possess the athletic ability to continue to grow and develop. And then as they get bigger and stronger, like you're talking about like a real prospect.
Yeah. And I think South Alabama, believe it or not, actually has a couple of those. They had one last year, Colson Lawrence, who I think signed with Miami. And then there's another kid who's draft eligible who's back at school. Yeah, everyone's talking about Will Turner. Mm-hmm. Which Will Turner, really good player, but there's another outfielder there. Can't remember his first name, the last name, Sullivan.
Joseph Sullivan, yeah. Great Joseph dude. Sullivan.
Yeah. Big time athletes just kind of hanging out at South Alabama. Nothing new there. Big time athletes hanging out at South Alabama. Shout out to your wife.
You talking about Travis Flaherty? Big time. Yeah, I wasn't a big time athlete, but no, there's they do a great job developing players there. And they just like they invest in people.
Yeah, last little bit here in regards to factoring in athleticism when looking at an amateur player. I think we've talked a lot over the past couple of years about what athleticism means on a baseball field and what it means for your potential. So just kind of, you know, hit on that a little bit, just kind of like why measuring athleticism is important, why factoring it into how you view an amateur player, especially if you're like a college recruiting coordinator, you're, you know, obviously professional scouts factor that stuff in. You know, just talk a little bit about athleticism as an ingredient in all of that.
Yeah, I think overall athleticism shows you just someone's true potential, but it also, like, can I tell a story?
Yes. Sorry, I'm on a
story kick right now. So we're talking about the 2020 COVID shutdown. That was where Matt and I actually met at a facility in Alabama, and he introduced me to this technology, and we're like, hey, we're going to test your jumping. I'm like, I've never really tested that. Like, I've jumped on a force plate before, but didn't really get the data. And throughout testing athleticism, you're like, dude, you're losing out on like a lot of stability, a lot of power. He's like, you produce power, but you're missing out on a lot of it. Like your potential is much higher than what you're actually doing. So I think that's a big reason why in 2021, I had that big jump is because we cleaned up a lot of things and I started to hit the ball harder and move better. And I was able to play every day because my body was healthy. That's one thing people don't talk about when you talk about like testing athleticism is especially what we do with the load nap is like, if I'm jumping on one leg and one leg is significantly better or worse than the other, you're talking about like possibly getting injured, right? One leg is kind of dominating over the other one. You're talking about soft tissue injuries, possibly ligamentous injuries, knees, everything, ankles. So shows you true potential, allows you to clean up those things, tap into more overall athleticism and prevent injury.
Yeah. You talked about it way early on in this pod about just trying to gain a step at 26 years old and how that's not particularly an easy thing to do, but that's the right mentality. I think in your off season, it's not necessarily that you're going to find that next step, but if you're working as if you're trying to find that next step, then you're at the very least going to conserve what you got. And I think at the end of the day, especially for professional athletes, full grown adults, like your athleticism is your longevity in the game. You know, it's like not every guy is going to be Yadier Molina where he provides so much value behind the plate to a pitching staff that, you know, that kind of extends his career. You know what I mean? Like Yadi can get by having 1% foot speed, you know, at the end of his career because he does so much behind the plate. But like Brendan Donovan, sorry, Brendan, like you're not Yadier Molina. So I think for, you know, your goals in trying to play as long as you can, you fully understand, you fully grasp, and you live by, you know, whether it's in season and the routines that you have in season for taking care of your body or out of season, preparing yourself for the 162 game schedule. Like you live by trying to tap into and maximize every bit of athleticism that you have. And it shows up on the field.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to ask too, because I think it's interesting. You talked about the 2020 shutdown and then sort of how that laid the groundwork. You talked about, you know, what you did in that offseason going into 2021.
A lot of jumping on one leg.
Yeah, 2022. But I also know last year, and it was something I wrote about, and you know, I think Matt and I had discussed maybe offline at the time before we were recording together. But you had done some things last offseason too to try to tap into more power. And it was something that showed up in spring training. I mean, I was there when you hit a couple of tanks. So interested, like, did 2020 China and the success you had following, did it sort of shift your mentality in terms of like being really focused every offseason on improving in particular areas or identifying something and then sort of improving it? I don't know if my question is necessarily put together the right way, but
yeah,
it feels as if there's been a pattern here and an adjustment.
Yeah, I think that jump started it. I think, you know, this, it almost honestly like made me ask more questions. And I think that's like you learn by asking questions and by failing. Those are really the only two ways to grow and develop. And I think that's why Matt and I hit it off so well, is because like he asks questions, I ask questions. There's times where like it sucks because we can't ever have like a 5-minute phone call. It always ends up being an hour long. But
I know what that's like.
It's a blessing and a curse. But you know, your body's everything, right? Your body, like it's your tool. Like if the more you can get out of that and the longer you can make it work efficiently, the better off you'll be. So 2020, I was like, wow, I need to take care of my body. And now I'm still learning. I got this nice little scar now. It's like, showed me I need to do things differently. Like I need to continue to grow. And so I moved down here. That's why we moved down here. I was like, not only is it amazing and Florida's amazing to live in, but I was like, there's this one guy I want to train with in Florida. Colby Tullier, and it's Goldie's the one that kind of pushed me in that direction. You know, I started to learn how to move my body a little bit more efficiently, and then I got to the big leagues and we're in Wrigley, and I flew out to the warning track. We're playing like I think it was 5 games in 4 days because we had a doubleheader. I flew out to the warning track for like the 3rd or 4th time in the series, and Goldie's always so positive. He's like, hey man, good swing. And I was like, I looked at Goldie and I was like, how do I hit the ball harder? And I was like, so that's athleticism, right? That's power output. That's efficiency. That's mobility. It's everything. And he's like, don't worry, I got you. So he's like, you're moving to Florida, right? And I was like, yeah, we bought a place. We're moving down there. So this is where we're at. And it's 2023. I got hurt. But guess what? It's I said silver lining. It's a silver lining because, all right, well, I wasn't moving efficiently in my throwing. So that shows me that I need to use the ground a little better. I need to work on the kinetic chain, transfer energy, use my rib cage a little more, get some more T-spine mobility. It's like a rabbit hole that I've completely gone head first down. And I'm glad I did, because I'm asking more questions. I'm failing more, which means I'm growing more. And it's keeps my off seasons interesting. Long days though, but I like them.
Yeah. The stable.
Yeah.
Kay Wayne.
He's amazing. As
seen on, what's that Netflix show about the golfers?
Full Swing.
Yeah, Full Swing. Yeah. As seen on, yeah. Full Swing. He appears in there. Yeah. He appears in there. They tag him on there. He works with what? Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson.
You walk in that gym, and the cool thing that they do is for every tournament that golfers win, or anyone that trains there wins an award, they hang a banner for him. So you walk in and you look around the gym, there's just banners everywhere.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that a guy like you from the South who enjoys warm weather doesn't need to travel up to the rainy northwest part of the United States to get what you need. Sounds like there's other places that you can go to get what you need other than one spot.
Yeah, too. I mean, and also on a Friday, my workout is half paddleboarding, right? So, and two, like – we talked about playing different sports. Is like, I always thought that I was pretty athletic and had great balance. And then you put me on a paddleboard and I'm the one that's getting dumped over the side. So it's like, for another thing for kids, it's like, do everything, play everything. I'm 26 years old and I want to try this paddleboarding thing. And it turns out I'm not very good, but that's good because I want to get better at it. I want to learn how to do this so I can have better balance and have the ability to weight shift and control my frame.
This guy's got a big leaguer problems getting knocked off paddle boards by yachts.
Yeah, they're not my yachts.
Not yet.
I paddle by them in fear / jealousy.
Maybe someday you can name it the SS Sandy in honor of your turtle.
Honor. Exactly. That's fun.
All right, last thing. This one's quick, and then we'll let you go. And I know Jeff's got to go pick up his kids from school. Little known part of baseball. This has fascinated me since knowing you, because I never really played baseball at a high level as an adult, so I didn't really factor this in. But I think this rings true for a lot of people who watch the game, follow the game, whatever it is. They don't fully appreciate the toll that it takes on your body to slide. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about sliding, stealing bags, how much that beats up your body, and give us kind of an honest depiction of over the course of a season. And like even the difference between like day game, night game, warm weather, cool weather, dry weather, wet weather, and kind of how that impacts, what happens to your body after a slide.
Yeah. So, being on your feet and like metal spikes when you're playing in the dirt, or even if you're playing in the far spot, you're in the first base side and you got to run to left field, or vice versa, third base, you got to run to right field. Like people don't realize it takes a toll on your body, and they're constantly rotating and standing on your feet. That's why people like have obliques and backs and hamstrings, just like fatigue over the course of a season. But for me, it's my feet. My feet kind of get banged up. And I mean, my elbow got banged up. I think that was just not being efficient, but also so many different positions and so many different arm actions. And but that shows I need to manage that a little better. But sliding, sliding. Day game, a little chilly out, so it's a little frigid. Dirt's pretty hard. It was a little windy. You can put as much water on you, but eventually in a day game, it's just going to dry up and it turns into essentially concrete. So I stole two bases one game. We're playing the Pirates. I stole second and I stole third. And then I ended up sliding feet first another time. So that's three slides in one game. And I completely shredded the top of my knee, the right on my knee, and then the outside of my shin. And it was... the worst part is when you get in the shower after and it just stings and it hurts so bad. And then the next day I slid again, feet first, and I ripped it open, and I'm putting all kinds of things on it. I'm putting pads on it. I'm trying to wrap, I'm putting knee pads, I'm putting everything I can, but just kind of, you're going full speed. And you're just essentially crashing into the ground. And you're doing it at high speed. You don't want to slow down because you want to be able to break up a double play legally, of course, or be able to get in there and avoid a tag. And I eventually, a couple of days later, I'm out there, I'm taking ground balls, and I'm having trouble walking. So I go into the training room. I was like, I can't really walk. I'm like, all right, well, let's check it out. Turns out I have a skin infection. My scabs on my shin and my knee got infected. And I think they told me I was like 1 or 2 days. If I wouldn't have said anything, then we would have had to like cut some skin away. So it's brutal. I mean, I don't know if that was a technique thing, but I mean, I went feet first and head first, and I just kept ripping my knees and my shins open. But it takes a toll on you, and you play so many games. It's the travel, the sleep. It's when your sleep gets messed up, that puts your body at a bigger chance for injury. But it's a lot of games, a lot of games, a lot of days, long days, day games, cold day games are the worst. Hot day games are pretty brutal too, but this cold day games, because your body just takes forever to get it going.
Yeah.
But I live in South Florida, you guys are the ones that have to deal with the cold, so you can talk on that.
Yeah, I got the dry cold, he's got the wet cold. And
you never get used to it though.
Yeah. I do think it's important to note that for anybody who's listening that potentially deals with kids, has kids, or if you're a kid listening, to learn the skill of sliding when you're young, when you're not throwing around 200 pounds like Brendan is. If you're 110 pounds and you're sliding, that's a whole lot less force on the dirt, and you can kind of perfect your technique at that point. I think that's part of like the whole multi-sport conversation, is that like sliding appears more in other games. And if you can perfect that, then maybe someday you can be like Trey Turner, and when you slide, you don't even touch the ground.
If you're going that fast, it's probably easier. But no, it's weird. I was like, you know, I used to go down, like when I would go feet first, I would go like shin down and then like try to pop up slide. And then after that, I was like, well, I need to go like a little bit more on my side. And now not only do I have a strawberry on my knee, but I got one on my hip too. And I was like, all right, we got to go feet first. Now I'm ripping the tops of my knees. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I was like, hopefully I can just go in standing up.
I'm going to see you out there next year in football pads.
Maybe. Anything to keep from getting another. That was brutal. Honestly, it was brutal.
You wore a baseball on your neck, so I think you can handle some raspberries and maybe an infection, or you got to get your
leg. I'll take the neck ball over the any day over the raspberries.
The neck ball pain goes away shortly.
Yeah. You don't feel that in the shower.
You're picking those scabs from like road rash in the bases for weeks. I was a total punch and Judy in high school. So like I bunted, I hit the ball the other way, I ran a ton. And my high school coach loved to run. Like I don't think we still have it, but the year before I went to my high school, I was in middle school, they set the national stolen base record. So like,
wow,
I ran a lot. And I was going to ask, did you ever have to slide because you played down on the Cape with Hyannis. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to slide at old Spillane Field in Wareham with the
gray?
Oh, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I wasn't on base much in the Cape, so I didn't have many slides. But that's the thing. Like, you get these raspberries and these strawberries, and you almost don't want them to go away. Because if they go away, that means, one, you're not playing, or two, you're not getting on base. So it's like, yeah. I guess I'm fine with having these, because that means at least I'm getting some knocks and scoring some runs.
It's a little bit like a bodybuilder and their calluses.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's all it is. Now I just have like I have feet where I have like nerve damage because of it. It's no big deal. It's perfectly fine.
Lovely.
Ow. All right. Well,
all right, Brendan, get you back to saving the sea turtles.
Yeah, exactly. Get back to enjoying beautiful Jupiter, Florida. Go to Copacabana and get some tremendous Cuban food. I go there every single time I'm over at Dean. I walk from the backfields over to Copacabana, and you know, I get something.
Let me see. It's 83 degrees right now. So
lucky you.
Tell me about that.
There you go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. That was Brendan Donovan of the St. Louis Cardinals. I want to thank you for tuning in. For Jeff, for Matt, this is the 90th percentile.
Awesome.